Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
If you listen to most of the environmental masters, our salvation will come with a clean tech revolution of innovation, invention, and massive investments. And they are right. New technologies are being announced each day that promise to lead us up to the mountain. But one of the most powerful technologies for change comes from the vision that only artists have the tools to create. To Jen Trout and an emerging army of creatives, art is the technology of the future, as you'll come to know when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wildside News. We now continue our exploration of the life and longings of one of America's most gifted and dedicated artivists, Jen Trout.
And let's talk about some more. I'm going to run through some of the names here. Mega Mall, one can imagine what that might be about. Madonna of the Salton Sea. Now, people who aren't from California may not be familiar with the Salton Sea, but that's an amazing story. There's also one of my favorites is Invasion. It looks almost like something out of a World War II war poster rallying people, or it has almost like a Japanese look to it graphically with the sunburst, mm-hmm. Okay, with a city scene and massive metropolis, but then dominating so powerfully is a bear and a lion and a snake just walking over the city. And you know, the truth is, I've often wondered if there isn't a time when the animals may finally just get together and decide it's time to take over. I look at some of the events that are happening on the edges of cities where we find cougars or bears or other animals coming into our world. And there's two reasons for that. One is they don't have food, but another may be that we're actually allowing them to do so, which we haven't in the past. But I also sometimes wonder, when I hear about the stampeding animals, elephants in India, that are just rampaging through towns and snapping up any food they can get, and other situations where, for example, kangaroos are rampaging through areas of Australia, breaking into houses and stealing food. That, you know, this is coming true in some respects. But talk to me about Invasion. It's a powerful piece.
Well, that was actually meant to be a lighter piece compared to the other ones, aimed a little more at kids. I was sort of thinking of the Godzilla movies, the big Godzilla creature and Mothra looming high above Tokyo, and so these animals are descending upon the city, and they're basically screaming at us. They're finally getting our attention by completely invading our space, basically. It's almost like it had to come to that. They had to completely invade Metropolis like a Godzilla creature in order to finally get our attention.
And what's interesting is that these are animals that we can relate to. I think it's interesting that the types of animals. It isn't just Western animals of America. It really is this diversity with the bear. The bear, of course, almost represents America in some respects, but as well a lion, and there's also a cobra. And
there's a lion cub in the foreground, mm-hmm. and that was an elk in the background, far off in the distance.
A great diversity of animals. I think it's a really wonderful representation of the diversity of kinds and forms of animals. Yeah, very important. You know, another related piece is Scream. This, again, to me, is such a powerful piece. Is this one designed more for kids? It could be.
That one was also, yes. And Scream is supposed to feel like a scream when you look at it. The colors are very, very bright. Some of them are almost acidic. There are these concentric circles coming out of a point sort of near the middle of the painting, and they go all the way out to the edge of the painting in one part of the painting, and they're sort of psychedelic looking, almost a little hard to look at. And there are these little animals floating around, these concentric circles. Down below, there's a futuristic city, lots of industry and oil wells. There's a huge tiger cub perched on this cityscape, and he's screaming at us at the bottom half of the painting. Next to him is a hot pink coyote pup that has its mouth open, and he looks like he's screaming, and all those concentric circles emanate from his mouth. So the center point of all those circles comes from his mouth. And these two things are huge against this cityscape. They look like they're gigantic.
They are gigantic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Behind that pink coyote is a huge image of a face. It's a nice face. It's a female. The colors are all done in bright blues. She's looking straight at us. We see about half of her face from the front. And all of those concentric circles emanating from the coyote's mouth also line up with where her ear would be. The coyote's sort of in front of part of her face. So what's coming out of his mouth also lines up with her ear, as if she's hearing him scream. And she's just looking at us. She has some pink flowers up at the top of her head, and she looks like she might be some sort of a image of nature. So this is about nature hearing the scream of these animals that are suffering, basically. It's really in your face. The animals are screaming at us, and they're screaming at nature, and she's hearing it. And that's pretty much...
Any reason specifically for a pink coyote? The other animals are rendered in natural colors. I'm just curious why a pink... It may have just been an artistic decision, but because your colors are so vivid and bright and powerful. But I did notice the pink coyote.
You know, I was inspired by the psychedelic posters of the 60s when I did this piece. I was looking through a little book on Haight-Ashbury posters, and so I just sort of colored things to look as psychedelic as I wanted, depending on where they were in the piece. His color is pink, basically, just for the effect to the eye. His coloring is hard to look at. He's so bright.
Right. He's totally unnatural.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It really does stand out. As I say, look at the pictures. They'll make much more sense to you as we talk about this, as you watch and look at them on the website. One of the ones that I found really, you had a whole story interwoven. This becomes one of your ad pieces, and that's Nature and the Mammal. Very interesting, because in this case you've literally incorporated a bit of a storyline, words in other words, with this intriguing character. The woman herself represents just sort of a normal mammal woman. She's not particularly beautiful. She's not unbeautiful. She looks like someone who'd live next door, who seems like a pretty nice person, but she's just a regular consumer, sort of, or something. That would be my take on it. What can you tell us about Nature and the Mammal, and as well the words, which I found intriguing?
It's a large piece, actually. It's about 6 feet tall. And she is, again, supposed to represent another aspect of nature. And the writing on the piece is a haiku that I made up. And it's about how nature doesn't really care whether or not we get our act together, because it will go on to something else once we're done with our run here, if we choose to end it that way. It's a very symmetrical painting. There's like a dark astral background with little stars popping out of the blackness of the background. She's kind of disembodied. Her torso emerges out of an agave plant at the bottom. Behind her head is a huge blossom. It's a rose blossom. And she's got a basket of flowers under one arm, and she has a skull in her left hand, and to her right is, on the opposite side of the painting of the skull, symmetrically to it, is a little polluted-looking image of the earth. And she's got the skull in her hand, very casually, sort of looking at us, and she almost has a half smile. She is supposed to be looking at us as if to say, "Hey, it's up to you. Do you want me to recite the haiku? I think I remember." Now, I'm not a writer, but here's my haiku. The mammal was god of the blue and green jewel. All others bowed down. Brilliant creations did its confidence inflate, dazzled by its hand. Overtaking speed, replicating self on self, trampling all else. The mammal was done. Amused nature turned away. The planet was still. And what that means is that the mammal, being the human, was dazzled by its own creations. We're dazzled by our technology, by our power. We're in complete control. The other creatures on this planet bow down to us. We're replicating self on self. We keep reproducing like a virus, trampling all else. You know, we trample everything around us. The mammal was done. That means we basically used it all up. Amused nature turned away. So the figure of nature turns away and goes on to the next project, basically. And then the last line is, the planet was still. So that's it.
I was intrigued by this concept of the mammal being this dominant creature. And I haven't really thought about that before. There's many powerful animals in the world, but this concept that somehow mammal has been given this privileged but ultimately destructive place, it's intriguing.
Yeah, you know, I think it's hard not to be dazzled by our technology and by what we're able to do.
That's the problem. We live in a world of miracles.
Yeah.
I mean, we do. We live in a world of miracles. We've transcended rational thought, and we're doing things that there was a time when people would have said was impossible to do. We now take for granted cell phones and our technologies and capacities to travel off to other planets. You know, it is quite extraordinary. However, somewhere in this process, we just don't seem to take the time to look behind us to see where we've come from. The woods, and the waters, and the wonder, and the mountains. Many of us do. But unfortunately, the dominant, there's part of this dilemma that you and I and many, many others are fearing right now or feeling right now is the momentum of it. How do we change the, it's basically we have a problem of momentum. We're just overdoing this thing, and how are we supposed to, it's my own question, maybe you have an answer, maybe you've thought about this, but it isn't a momentum issue. Well, if we were able to rein this in somehow and kind of deal with it in a more responsible way, that we could live in a paradise, ultimate paradise. Unfortunately, it's just the momentum of this that is the problem.
I'm not an expert, I'm an artist, but it does seem to me that we're almost getting seduced by the idea that this descent into something that we can't pull out of is inevitable. And I can only speak from my own experience here. It's not over till it's over. You can descend pretty far into a pit and still climb out. That's all I have to say about it.
One of the great things about art is the fact that stories are told in an instant, or perhaps in a very short period of time. One of my ancient best friends was a writer, and I was an artist, and we had an incongruity in our art forms. In order for me to appreciate his work, when he'd finish a book or a novel, I had to invest days of my time, days of my time, to be able to give him an impression of what I thought of his work. Because you really can't comment until it's over.
Right.
Okay. And he could come in and he could take a look at my work and in an instant. Mm-hmm. Make commentary. That is the power of art.
Right. I think it's it's a tool for the environmental movement that is completely untapped. I think there's a lot of potential there. When you think about the way paintings were used by the Catholic Church to educate the masses of people who couldn't read, it was phenomenally successful. You know, a painting can say so much in about 3 minutes, and a person will, you know, casually look at a painting, turn away from it, think that they've forgotten about it, and find later that it has somehow either affected their subconscious or it consciously bothers them, and they find that they have to come back to the thought of it and resolve something that is just eating at them. But, you know, when you're dealing with trying to communicate to a population that is incredibly busy, incredibly distracted, and incredibly overwhelmed a lot of times, you really want to use tools that are as effective as possible in the shortest amount of time. I see great potential for this. There are a lot of artists out there coming out of these ateliers that have sprung up in the last 10 years who can really, really paint and really draw. They're absolutely phenomenal. And there are also a lot of illustrators out there who have been working for the corporations all these years, and they have their own ideas too. This is an untapped resource. And if someone were to sponsor art competitions, I think they would get a tremendous response from artists, because every artist that I know of and that I talk to is very, very disturbed about what's going on. Most of them are, they haven't been cracked upside the head like me. So they're not doing these images full-time like I am. They have to earn a living. They have kids they have to feed. And the way things stand right now, no one is earning a living, you know, doing this kind of imagery. But there have been some environmental art shows in L.A. in the last couple of years. There have been several, and the response to these shows was really phenomenal. A lot of artists did a couple pieces and sent them in, and I was very amazed at the quality of work. And they were very, very popular shows, very, very well attended by the public. And I was also really impressed at the range of imagery. It was really interesting stuff.
Jen Truitt, we're talking to, artist in San Diego. And I agree with you. You're absolutely right. But I will say this. I do believe that your work stands, at this point, alone. I really haven't seen someone who's been able to say this in a way that is alluring and luxurious and provocative and startling and frightening and hopeful all at the same time. You're truly an artist who is working in realms that very few others are able to achieve. Some people are a little too much in your face, too much shock value. There's many people doing many things. I just wish to say that you really are transcendentally pushing this message in a way that deserves some attention. And I'll also say, because I think this is also important, you know, if you're going to do good art, it takes time. You just plain have to invest real time. How much time do you spend? And I realize it varies, but generally speaking, can you estimate how much time it takes to finish it? What
yeah.
are your pieces?
Well, I'm getting quicker now, but several months of full-time work on most pieces. Four months is not unusual. 4 months of full-time work.
And I mention that because I'd like each person listening to think about themselves, about their work, about how much they're paid, you know, how much they make in their careers, and realize that art of this caliber does take real time. It is a profession, and it's time that people out there reward the artists, because it's important. These messages have power, and they're just as important a part of of making a difference on this planet as anything else. So when an artist asks for a reasonable amount of money, meaning thousands of dollars for a piece of work, understand what that really means. Because while you're painting, you're not out making a living doing something else. This is your work. This is your life. This is what you do. And you do it extremely well.
Thanks.
Yeah. I guess maybe one other question. How do you go about finding these visions? How do you do? They're very complex.
It varies a lot from piece to piece. Sometimes I'll be doing something totally unrelated to art, and I'll just get a flash of a basic concept, and I'll write it down, no matter what I'm doing, and come back to it later, and then develop it further, like with, you know, layer upon layer of clarification. And sometimes I'll find an image that intrigues me. For instance, I did a painting called Elephant that features a huge side view of an elephant skeleton with a little normal baby elephant hovering around its knees. I did that piece because I came across a picture of an elephant skeleton in a book, and I was really struck by how human the head looked and how strange the whole skeleton was. And I worked from there. So that piece was as much about the fascination I had with the elephant skeleton head as it was about the environmental idea behind it. A lot of times I find that I'm not given the next step until I'm right at the point where I'm ready to take that step. So I could be working on a piece for several months and not really know how I'm going to get from point A to point B. I just have to trust that when the time comes, I'm going to be given the right information. So what I have to focus on is basically what I do know how to do. And it's always amazing to me how, you know, when I have that trust and I just focus on what I do know, the answer comes. And it's often an unexpected answer. It's often an answer that isn't logical, you know, that doesn't come from the rational mind. I often find that it's almost like a joint effort. I have to sort of reach out and have enough faith in the creative process to get to a certain point. And if I'm willing to do that, the muse or whatever it is comes in to get me to the next step. So I sort of have to surrender a lot of control, and I have to be willing to feel like I'm being led sometimes. Although I do work with pretty tight designs to begin with.
Obviously, you're going to continue to paint into the future, and that almost scares me. In the sense that you're going to keep, I know that you're on a quest here. You're going to keep telling this story, and I'm just concerned because I talk about the fact that, you know, people are talking about the complete death of the amphibian world within 10 years. What are we supposed to do with that knowledge? People who grew up with frogs and salamanders and things. I do my work, you do yours. So many people out there, I encourage everybody out there to keep on doing everything we can right now. Quite honestly, and your work reflects this, it's time to do something now. We have to come to the realization that we're at a crossroads.
Right. In some of the pieces I have lined up, I want to start trying to address the underlying causes of these problems. I have several ideas already. Again, I think it's the sort of situation where I'm going to have to do a certain number of paintings, and then I'll be given the ideas for the next batch. Because I don't think I'm supposed to be using a confrontational approach for all of these paintings. You know, there are all kinds of aspects to what's happening, and exploring the root cause of it all is definitely a part of it. I mean, I'd like to do some pieces that show what it feels like to somehow be part of the answer. Those images are not clear to me yet, although I'm beginning to get some indications of where they'll go. So I'm working on that.
And I just have to say that to me is a fascinating statement, because I think that's precisely where humanity is right now. We don't know what the answer is right now. No one has been able to determine what that is. And you as an artist who seek for that answer and some means to interpret that are searching too, because perhaps as well that we all need the muse right now. We as a people, as a species, are looking for the muse. We're creating our future here, and we're looking for that way out. We're looking for that creation that will resolve this thing we call the art of living. And I don't have that answer either.
Yeah, you know, it might very well be that it won't be given to us until we make enough of an effort on our own. We just have to have faith that, you know, if we do as much as we possibly can now, when we get to that bridge, we're going to be given the ability to cross it. I mean, I know it looks terrible. I was just on a website this morning on the sixth mass extinction, and it was listing all the species that are supposed to die off in the next 10, 20, 30, or 50 years. And it was completely overwhelming.
It is completely overwhelming.
Yeah.
When I think about the chimpanzees and gorillas that are so threatened right now, and snow leopards, and animals that have always been legacy creatures for us, they were the great iconographic mystery power objects in our lives as children and adults. And the fact that we're facing a future where they may just not be here anymore, what a disaster for us on our watch.
Yeah.
What a loss to the children of the future, to all of us. And quite honestly, the real question is, will we really be able to survive when we have this level of this miraculous balance of nature being ripped out? I think some of us wonder.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like we're operating at a level of reality that actually isn't real. When I was dealing with the illness, I had financial problems a lot of the time because I couldn't work. And I was very tempted to go back to doing storyboard work. And I had two sets of reality that were sort of like fighting for space in my head. And I used to flip-flop back and forth between them. One reality said, you know, it's crazy to not be doing anything to bring in money. Go back to doing some storyboard work. You're not going to be able to pay your bills. And it was everything that I grew up with. That was the reality that was sort of my upbringing. So the other reality was the one that said, you don't know what the answers are, but this work you're doing is what's keeping you alive. And if you want to stay alive, you're not going to waste any time worrying about money. It's a completely different reality. Plus, the work you're doing is important. I mean, it might be that one person sees one of these paintings, and that person is the one who's going to make the difference. You know, even if that's what all your work is all about, that's important. So, you know, these two realities were just so utterly different that I had quite a battle going on. I think that's what we're dealing with as a society. We have one reality where we think, you know, well, we have traffic to worry about and the mortgage and, you know, the kids work in school and, you know, things that used to be very pressing issues but are really more like distractions now. Then we have the other reality, which is basically that we all need to absolutely drop everything. I mean, and I do mean drop everything and pay attention to what's happening. So, you know, it might very well be that something really drastic happens to snap us out of one reality into the real reality. when you talk about one reality versus another reality, also, I was watching Ken Burns' World War II documentary a couple weeks ago, and I was really struck by the mobilization of the country for the war effort. Everybody was involved. It was the issue of the day, and it affected people's work, it affected what people bought, it affected, you know, their food, what they wore, cosmetics. People relocated to work at these plants that turned out one bomber an hour or something like that. It was an incredible production. And that's what we need to be doing here. And it was because they had a sense that the threat from Hitler's regime and everything that was happening in Europe was so immediate that they needed to change everything in their lives in order to address it properly. I think we're at that point now, and I think that we can address this issue the way our society addressed what was going on in Europe and succeeded. All that's lacking is the will. So if we could do it then, we can do it now.
Well, this is what I would say, and that is the fact that I'm going to follow your work, and I encourage others to do the same and to, you know, seek out Jen Truth's work now and into the future, because perhaps it can be a catalyst, it can be a means to help us find that muse. Artists typically lead the way. They really do. And this discussion is an indication of perhaps why, because there's so much that is being processed and then turned into form that we can quickly understand, that otherwise words cannot express effectively and as efficiently. Jen Truth, JenTruthe.com. Go there, contact her. I'm sure many of you out there, some of you out there may wish to collect her work, because I do believe it will be significant in the future. This would be a good time to get in. Jen Truth, thanks so much for all that you do.
Well, thank you for the interview.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Sydney.
Some would say that we need a real revolution from our old ways on this earth to a new vision that harmonizes and balances the human and vast communities of wonder. This is a call to action, to pick up your pens and pencils, brushes and voices, to inspire the change that simply must come soon. This is Sydney Wildsmith saying adios, until we meet again next Thursday, or any time on the archives, when your voice of the earth rings out around the world, here on the Wild Side News.